This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is a return guest. Actually, this is only his second time here. Carl Dixon of... Give us both websites.
It's captureplanning.com and Prop Library.
There you go. Tell us a little bit about Carl and for those who don't know, Capture Planning and Prop Library, please.
Okay. They are both online resources with a ton of information that can help people learn about business development and proposal writing. Prop Library is where we have the best of our content, and we actually sell that content. We have things like off-the-shelf end-to-end process that people can buy. But really what I do is content marketing to teach people and guide people, get them introduced, and then give them options regarding, you know, how they move forward. And, you know, a lot of them end up becoming subscribers.
Okay, and subscribers not only to the website, which is a membership site, but also you have something free people can subscribe to, and that is the newsletter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the newsletter is very, very popular.
Yeah, so last I heard 70,000 plus.
Yep.
Yeah, so not bad. I'm hoping my newsletter gets somewhere close. Yeah. We'll see.
It just takes time.
It does. You know, I had 9,000 when I stopped back in 08, and I just, you know, I just felt that something had to go. I had the radio show. I had the column with Wash Tech. I had the blog. I had the consulting, and yeah, probably jettisoned the wrong thing. Should have jettisoned blogging and kept newsletter. Put the newsletter up as the blog. Whatever.
It's all goal driven.
It's goal driven, but it goes back to the content thing, which is going to be the theme of this show. So you do produce a lot of content. You run one of the better groups on LinkedIn, which is the business development long title group. But look up Carl Dixon. Look up business development. The icon for the group is the captureplanning.com website logo. But that brings up several points. Content is really, really hot. Anne Hanley's got her second book out on it, and 95% of that book has absolutely nothing to do with what we do. You know, there's just all manner of buzz about content marketing. What's wrong with that for our market, and why does content have to be different for us?
The vast majority of things that you'll see written on content marketing have to do with business to consumers. And then there's another large segment that deals with business to business. But if you think about business to government and the way companies in who have the government as customers need to interact with their customers, the interaction is very different. So the marketing needs to be different. So the way you would position content in your marketing strategies needs to be different and relate to how you interact with the government.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what kinds of issues are we talking about as far as content goes? Venues, types of programs, et cetera. Let me preface that by saying, and this again is probably more B2B than B2G, but I think it's illustrative of an issue. Forrester and the Corporate Executive Board. Corporate Executive Board says 59%. Forrester says 70% of the buying decision is made prior to a prospect or customer reaching out to a potential vendor. Now, that's definitely going to be a little bit different in the government market, but predicated on conversations I've had with senior executives and most recently Simone Sickman on this show, former CIO of Commerce, you know, he says they do a tremendous amount of vetting of companies through content and through social media, especially LinkedIn. Lot of stuff there, so go where you want.
Yeah, in the business to business or business to consumer market, you would call that doing your homework, learning about a vendor before you even initially interact with them. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't surprise me at all the results from the Forrester research, but in business to government, that research has to follow a very specific process. And because it has to follow that process, the way you can support the government staff in doing their research needs to match their process. So if you think about business development with the government as a flow of information, there's information going from the company to the customer, and there's information that the company needs to get from the customer. And that's what you should model your content marketing around. So it's a combination of thinking through things like, how do you want to make recommendations about contract vehicles and recommendations about evaluation criteria and what to buy and the scope of work? That's information you want to provide to the government, but you also want to get information back from them. So the way that you would structure your content might be a mixture of things, some on your website, some in social media, some through direct contact, but all of it should drive to an interaction. Now, when we're offline, we call that relationship marketing.
Right.
When we're online, it's still relationship marketing. It just has to happen differently. And so to be successful with content marketing in the business to government space, you need to adapt all of the techniques of relationship marketing to online.
Okay. I know you were sort of an online pioneer. Your first website went up in 1990 before most people knew that they could access the web. That was Government Solutions written on the Mosaic platform. CapturePlanning.com and Prop Library provide, and your newsletter provide a tremendous amount of information to a very particular audience, and that's the proposal community at large. And most of what I see there is around that proposal building process. How much of the stuff are you producing is trying to teach people about influencing the RFP versus that, or is that more on your consulting side?
The proposal is just the way the sale closes. In order for the proposal to close with a win, there is a whole chain of things that have to happen, and they extend well beyond or further back in time than RFP release. So because I get all geeky about this stuff and see it as a flow of information.
Feel free. Geek out.
I help people in the pre-RFP phase with their business development to structure what they do so that it brings the right information into the start and development of the proposal so that the sale closes with a win. I'll go back in time even further and deal with the marketing that they need to do and get into areas like relationship marketing and content marketing. And in that particular area, I have a lot of strength because for my own business, that's what I do. I'm not just simply recommending content marketing to other people. I'm a practitioner of it.
You're one of the leading practitioners in our market of content marketing, which is why you're back again. Thank you. Well, you know, it is what it is, right? So I produce a lot of content, but mine is somewhat more diffuse in nature. I write about things that bother me at the moment or things that I'm going to be doing in the near term. So I'm a little more eclectic in the approach. But I want to get a lot deeper into this, and we're going to do it on the next segment. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Carl Dixon after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Carl Dixon. Carl is the proprietor of CapturePlanning.com and PropLibrary.com. Also, the producer, editor of what's the newsletter called?
Winning in Writing.
Winning in Writing. And I suggest you get it. I don't remember the name, but I do get it and I do read it. And I'm actually going to post bits of his newsletter in my newsletter because it's very cool. So I recently spoke at the fall APMP event again. It's a nice gig. But, you know, one of the things that you hear at this event, and it's just recurrent, the number one reason people lose business is the client doesn't know them. You don't necessarily agree with that.
No, I definitely disagree with that, especially if you take recompetes out of it and the whole incumbency issue, because I've coached proposal groups that had targeted things like GSA schedule bids where they were supposed to all be wired for somebody. Somebody always, you know, if you didn't write the spec, somebody else did. Mm-hmm. There's right. Another, you know, common saying from our industry. And we were winning. Okay, we were a complete unknown and we were blindly bidding things, doing everything wrong, but we were able to steal them away from, you know, if there was somebody who was a favored contractor, we were stealing them away left and right, and we weren't doing it on price. We were doing it by doing a better job of telling the customer what they would get as a result of selecting us. So it is possible to steal things away and to be successful, even in an environment where the customer doesn't know you. And one of the things that can help is a good content marketing strategy so that when you go into that bid and they look you up, because they don't recognize your acronym name, it's just another acronym name from, you know, the hundreds of companies that have them in our business.
Right.
So they go and look you up. And if they see very credible things that you're saying and you're showing insight and look like the kind of company that could really help them out, that can help qualify you in their eyes.
Okay. So a lot of the RFPs will require resumes of various levels of people. What is the role of having, or what's the value of having, subject matter experts on staff or on call? Because not every company can maintain a stable of them.
But it depends on the nature of your offering. In some cases, the customer's tech staff are the buyers. And if the customer's tech staff are the buyers, then you want to make sure that your tech staff are interacting with them. That's what you would want in a face-to-face relationship, and you need to achieve the same thing in your content marketing. So if that's your buyer, then your content marketing has to be oriented to that buyer. But if the buyer isn't the tech staff, then you want to make sure that your message is optimized to whoever the buyer is.
Okay. So if it does involve credentialed people, other than simply supplying the resumes of these people, how would you leverage the content marketing side to establish the credentials of these people?
I would want to make sure that if somebody is checking out, whether it's my company or my key staff, that they're very easy to vet. So I would want to make sure that when people look them up online, that they see more than just a resume, that they see these people have something to say or something to contribute. So I would definitely want their names to show up in content on my website and on other websites, okay, so that the customer sees these as recognized experts. Likewise, not just the website and trade journals, but LinkedIn. Make it easy for the customer to look up those people on LinkedIn, and now you can publish content on LinkedIn. So sometimes if you want to vet somebody, seeing what they have to say, what they've written, what their opinions are, and what their insight is, will tell you a whole lot more than their job history.
Okay. So what about speaking gigs? I do, you know, some keynotes, some lunch speeches, a lot of panels, a lot of breakouts. What's the value of being a panelist at an industry conference here? Because usually there's no transcript available.
This is where government marketing can be different from B2B or B2C. It really depends on whether your customer actually goes to those events. Mm-hmm. So are you actually going to get in front of your customer by going to those events? But if not, maybe you can record it and have that video show up on your website, mm-hmm. And get it in front of your customers that way. Getting the video in front of your customer where you were in front of an association or another group that had invited you to speak sends a definite message to the customer regarding how well recognized your expertise is.
Okay. What about either being quoted in the publications or writing for the trade pubs, not the generic business world pubs?
Any sort of recognition like that, that you can get in front of the customer, helps show that it's not just you saying great things about yourself, that other people have vetted your expertise and are interested and follow you and pay attention to what you have to say. And that, for the customer, is a real big clue. If you've got two people, both of whom's resume meets the minimum qualifications per the RFP, and neither one of those people you've personally met, and yet it really matters to you who you're going to spend the next 5 years working with on a project that impacts your career, who are you going to pick? Are you going to pick on resumes, whether the one person has 15 years experience or the other person has 16, or are you going to pick based on the insight that they show and the extent that to which they've been recognized in the industry?
Okay. What about blogging? A lot of companies will have, you know, the company blog. Some thought leaders will have their individual blogs. The company blogs tend to be, you know, posts by various people inside that organization and maybe an occasional guest post. But what about their ability to at least apparently write on their own?
Okay. Most of what B2G companies post on their blogs is wasted effort. Because if you think in terms of the customer interaction, okay, it does nothing to support it. Even the technical articles that companies post don't necessarily translate into the things that the customer might want to, let's say, copy and paste or borrow when they're writing a scope of work. So, you know, having that material out there might have a slight indirect benefit towards giving you a chance to demonstrate insight, which most companies don't actually do in their blog postings. But the real way to use a blog within the B2G market is to go beyond simply posting your capabilities package online. Mm-hmm. I mean, customers don't read capabilities packages when you hand it to them in person. Okay, why are you going to put the same useless material on your website? Okay, well, it's got to be there so they can look up your cage code when they need it. So yeah, some of that's got to be there, but having your capabilities package on the website does nothing to establish either your capabilities or demonstrate insight. and it doesn't translate into the information that they need in order to move a solicitation through their internal process in order to do business with you.
Okay. So how do you make the determination of let's hold this till after the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Carl Dixon. You can find Carl on LinkedIn. I suggest you do. And you can find him at captureplanning.com and proplibrary.com. Carl, The idea of content marketing here is to, number one, be found by your prospect community, take that prospect community to a new level and make sure that you're top of mind or near top of mind with them. So how do you, where do you get the tea leaves to read to determine what kinds of content a client needs for you to rise to the top?
Think about all the times that you're in a strategy planning session or in a proposal session where you're saying things to yourself like, why'd they write the spec that way? Why didn't they do this? Or I wish we could propose it this way. All of those are examples of messages that you really should have gotten in front of the customer when they were writing the RFP. And before the internet, the only way to do that was to physically get to the customer, to the person writing the RFP, if you could find that person and interact with them. But today, you can get in front of that person online by simply addressing those issues in your content. So if there are problems that the customer is trying to solve, you can make recommendations for ways to solve them. If there are things that they should do in the RFP, things that are important, you can recommend them as evaluation criteria. Stay away from this, encourage that, look for this. You can make those kind of recommendations through your content. Everything about the buying process is about navigating through trade-offs. And there are constant trade-offs between performance and price, trade-offs between this approach or that approach. And in your content, you can look for those trade-offs and then write content that helps the customer to decide, weigh the issues, give them options, things to consider. And in so doing, you're not only helping them to make decisions about what it is they need to buy and what they need to spec out in order to make the purchase, but you're also demonstrating that you've got good judgment, that you not only have experience, but you can apply that experience to doing the kind of things that the customer needs.
Okay. But again, prognosticating what kinds of information they need. Are you gleaning this stuff from the OMB filings through parsing out information you're gleaning from the website? So the 53s, yeah, in particular, how important are they?
Well, it depends on your strategic plan. What kind of company are you? Are you a company that solves problems, or are you a company that performs services? There's some overlap between those two, but there's also some differences. Are you the kind of company that sells a product, or are you the kind of company that tries to work in particular areas, or the kind of company that responds to whatever the customer asks for in the RFP? It all goes back to what your strategic plan is, what you're trying to be as a company. That tells you what kinds of content you need. And then you look at the customer's process for buying it and stage information relevant to every stage in that buying process. And those things can tell you, not only tell you what content, but where to put that content. Because sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it should be on your website, sometimes it should be in you know, published on LinkedIn, and sometimes it's in your email in interactions with customers. Sometimes, I mean, the content doesn't even necessarily have to be your own content. Sometimes sending links to the customer that help point them in the right direction is of benefit to the customer. So what we're really talking about is online business development. It's not really for in the business to government space. It's not really content marketing. It's not really relationship marketing. It's about doing business online, and that's different from doing it face to face. But it's becoming, you know, equally important, more important, and really depends on your particular customers. But it's something worthy of attention for everybody.
Okay. I like the concept of leveraging other people's content. I've written about that before. I did a session for Northern Virginia Tech on that, and it was actually very, very well received. It's an odd topic, but leveraging other people's content is certainly something that you can do and do well. So you've been writing about business development like forever, okay? Well, I mean, you have. But, you know, the process used to be the guys on the street meeting with technical people and other managers in government, in the agency for coffee, for lunch, for whatever. But developing that relationship, understanding the problems, the issues, and that has morphed. And it has translated to online, but how much of it can you do online? How much of it still has to be, you know, that face to face?
Depends on your offering. It depends on your customer, and it depends upon on the strengths of your business development people. But online is either going to play a lead role or a supporting role. These days, and the Forrester research shows it. It's hardly ever not going to play a role. So how you set up your online can either be a driver of sales for some businesses or support the sales of others. And whether your online material, your content is a reference, is a research tool for the customer, or whether it's something that your business development people own and send out as needed to support the messages they're trying to deliver, depends on your particular business. Okay, so that this is one of the reasons why B2G is very different from B2B. You have to have the right kind of toolbox for your particular market.
Okay. You know, it's funny because one of the things Simone said when he was, you know, he had a almost, I guess, 30-year career throughout government. He was at NIST. He was a CIO at NIST, then at Commerce, several other places. But he said, you know, one of the ways that he could tell that companies were somewhat more sophisticated than others is when their collateral material addressed agencies versus companies. And whenever he got materials that would address, you know, we can help your company do this, he immediately threw it away. You know, white paper didn't really matter. He didn't get to the technical side. They were not addressing the peculiarities or the perceived differences in the B2G market. How important is that perceptually I want to get into particularly LinkedIn on next segment, but as a perception, how important are those missteps when you're approaching an agency, especially for earlier in the market companies?
It's the difference between being heard and being ignored. And the way that you make sure that your message is heard is that you have to look at the interaction and what the customer is going to do with the information that you're providing. It changes company to company, and this is one of the reasons why it's hard to find good advice, or reason why most of what you'll read online about content marketing for business is just plain wrong for business to government. Because within business to government, the way you interact with your particular customers is going to be different from the way other companies interact with their company, with their customers. So it's about strategic planning, and it's about profiling your customers and profiling your customer interactions so that then you can apply content marketing to exactly what you're trying to do, so that like I said a minute ago, it might be something, a resource on your website that the customer goes to, or it might be something that your business developers send to the customers, or it might be something that supports your key staff, or it might be something that supports the writing of the scope of work. It depends on exactly how your business interacts with your customers.
Okay. My guest today is Carl Dixon of CapturePlanning.com, PropLibrary.com, and again, find him on LinkedIn. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. We will be back after this.
Management Friday on Federal News Radio. Friday mornings at 10, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum host Women of Washington. Hear from Washington, D.C.'s ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation Washington leader. Then at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to learn the best career path for you. Management Friday on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Carl Dixon. Carl can be found at CapturePlanning.com, PropLibrary.com, and on the topic of this segment, LinkedIn. And it's D-I-C-K-S-O-N, not D-I-X-O-N. So there, you know, find him. You know, plug in Carl Dixon. If he doesn't pop up at the top of the list, I'd be surprised. Here's the deal. I'm updating the my LinkedIn workbook for both the LinkedIn Black Belt course, which is the generic B2B course, and the LinkedIn for GovCon, which obviously is for our market. But because I'm doing sessions in January and February, so I'm looking at you know, the groups have grown some. I'm looking at companies, and companies have grown by almost double in the last 60 to 70 days, 4 million to 7 million, zowie. But I start looking at some of the quality of the company descriptions, and a lot of people, you know, everybody's here. There's 1.4 million feds, all the contractors are here. Everybody you need to meet, or almost everybody you need to meet, is on LinkedIn, right? Why do so few people take the time to make themselves look good, and What is the downside?
Well, I think that for people as individuals, we think, okay, I'm not looking for a job right now, so I really don't need to have a profile that looks like a resume. So, yeah, I'll log in just to see what it is, and then they go away and focus on other things, because they're not thinking about it as a networking tool, and they're not thinking about it as a relationship marketing tool. They're not thinking that it's more about interacting with potential customers and people that in networking with other people in your profession. So they don't realize, you know, how important it really can be.
Mm. Okay. So, in point of fact, there's two places business people go, number one, number two, to vet anything. First one is Google, right? So you stick something in Google and you look to see what pops. If it's business to business or business to government, I know the feds are looking on LinkedIn. And I think a lot of the contractors are now as well. So there's a tremendous downside to not offering good information, at least C-level information. So many of the profiles I see just plain suck.
Well, here's the question for the CXO level. Okay, you've got this thing out there. All of your customers are on it. What did you say the number of feds on LinkedIn is now?
Over 1.4 million.
Right. All of your customers are there, right? all of your competitors are there, and all of your teaming partners are there. So yeah, but you're the CXO. You're probably too important to be there just because all of your customers, competitors, and teaming partners are there. So you probably shouldn't invest any time in it. That's where companies are right now. So if you're the CXO who sees that as an opportunity to get in front of your customers while your competitors aren't bothering to, then LinkedIn can be very successful for you. All right. When, you know, we've talked a lot about content marketing and customer profiling and getting the right message in front of the right people. Well, on LinkedIn, you can see who the right people are. You can not only find people within your customer, but you can walk around the org chart and you can find out what their roles are in the organization, and you can reach out to them and interact with them. And how valuable is that? And if you're involved in business development at all, maybe not even a specialist, even if you're, you know, tech staff who you know, maybe a project manager who only does a little bit of business development, that's a great tool for you to be able to play in the business development space in a way that you're comfortable with, as opposed to the way, you know, it used to be done, you know, back in the days before online. So there's a lot there that to take advantage of and to do it while it gives you a competitive advantage, because you're you know, competitors aren't fully leveraging it yet.
Yeah. When I do research on a company or an agency, I start by looking up the agency or company on LinkedIn, and it will tell you how many first degrees you have there, how many second degrees, and how many total employees. So and the number's a little bit misleading, but not very, because it can include former employees and it can include contract workers on site. But overall, it's pretty accurate. One thing that I found is, number one, there's no agency, even Intel, that's not on LinkedIn. Now, admittedly, the IC community is there in radically smaller numbers, okay? And probably more on the appointee level than the people we really want to meet level. I have no desire to meet more appointees. No traction. There's minimal traction there, right? So you want people to do stuff. But for you, when you're working with a company, how can you leverage this?
You just dropped a golden nugget that probably passed by most of the people listening. When you go to the company page or the organization page for a government agency, the number's a little bit misleading because there are former employees in that number. Former employees, you know, the kind that are allowed to talk.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Where else in the world, you know, where could you go to find the former employees that you don't already know and reach out to them? Find out what their qualifications are to see if they might be a potential project manager for your bid, or just simply somebody you might want to engage as a consultant to learn about the agency now that they are free and able to talk. So that's one way, one thing that you can do that's far easier than ever before. That has incredible value for business development. But even the people who are current employees, you can look them up and see how they define their own role in the organization. And you can, and that helps you to figure out who to talk to within the agency, because it's not just enough to have, you know, a contact within the agency. You have to have the right contact and you have to get to the right person. So now you can look up a whole bunch of them and sort of navigate around and then go into to the ask for referrals and zero in on the right person, then look them up and see what their resume is.
One more nugget then, when you're looking at some of these profiles, look and see what groups they belong to. And now once you start to see the same group pop up and again, you've identified the group where you can start loading that content. Join the group, put out the influencing content there, and they will by hook or crook start to see you, your company, your information.
It's a very indirect approach, and within B2G, indirect approaches are sometimes vitally important, which is something which is a difference from B2B. But yeah, if you can get into the same groups that you know your customers are paying attention to, then without direct interaction with them, you can get in front of them with messages that help to show that you're the kind of company that they might want to work with.
And you might be able to influence that TA portion of the LPTA. Who knows what can happen? Give me some final thoughts here, Carl.
You need to develop your content planning or your content marketing strategy to support your strategic plan and your business development, which means it's now part of business development. It's not something separate. It's not something you hand off to the intern. Okay. It's not
media person should do.
Right. This is now part of how you do business development. You need to build it into your standard operating processes and make it part of how you get the information you need to win the things that you're pursuing.
Okay. Greatly appreciated. Again, Carl Dixon, you can find Carl at captureplanning.com, at proplibrary.com, and on LinkedIn. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is not my day job. I advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government. I advise companies and individuals on leveraging LinkedIn. The Government Market Master Forum, my education program, has monthly programs starting January 15th with the LinkedIn Black Belt Workshop. You can find that information at my profile on LinkedIn. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.